We've traced the causes of that great struggle in Chapter 36, Section 6. Its course we can't relate here, nor tell how President Lincoln, who was born in 1809 and died in 1865 and was president from 1861, rose to greatness, how the Republic was cleansed from the stain of slavery, and how the federal government of the Union was preserved. The story of President Lincoln is in itself a great epic of union and order threatened and saved, and it's with reluctance that it's treated so briefly here. But in this outline, we must cling closely to our main story. For 4 long years, 1861 to 1865, this American Civil War swung to and fro through the rich woods and over the hills of Virginia between Washington and Richmond, until at last the secessionist left was thrust back and broken, and Sherman, the Unionist general, swept across Georgia to the sea in the rear of the main Confederate or secessionist armies. All the elements of reaction in Europe rejoiced during the 4 years of Republican dissension. The British aristocracy openly sided with the Confederate states, and the British government permitted several privateers, and particularly the Alabama, to be launched in England to attack the federal shipping. Napoleon III was even more rash in his assumption that after all the New World had fallen before the old. The sure shield of the Monroe Doctrine, it seemed to him, was thrust aside for good. The great powers might meddle again in America, and the blessings of an adventurous monarchy be restored there. A pretext for interference was found in certain liberties taken with the property of foreigners by the Mexican president. A joint expedition of French, British, and Spanish occupied Vera Cruz, but Napoleon's projects were too bold for his allies, and they withdrew when it became clear that he contemplated nothing less than the establishment of a Mexican empire. This he did, after much stiff fighting, making the Archduke Maximilian of Austria Emperor of Mexico in 1864. The French forces, however, remained in effectual possession of the country, and a crowd of French speculators poured into Mexico to exploit its mines and resources. But in April 1865, the Civil War in the United States was brought to an end with the surrender of the great Southern commander, General Lee, at Appomattox Courthouse, and the little group of eager Europeans in possession of Mexico found themselves faced by the victorious federal government in a thoroughly grim mood, with a large, dangerous-looking army in hand. The French imperialists were bluntly given the alternative of war with the United States or clearing out of America. In effect, this was an instruction to go. This was the entanglement which prevented Napoleon III from interference between Prussia and Austria in 1866, and this was the reason why Bismarck precipitated his struggle with Austria. While Prussia was fighting Austria, Napoleon III was trying to escape with dignity from the briars of Mexico. He invented a shabby quarrel upon financial grounds with Maximilian, and withdrew the French troops. Then, by all the rules of kingship, Maximilian should have abdicated, but instead he made a fight for his empire. He was defeated by his recalcitrant subjects, caught, and shot as a public nuisance in 1867. So the peace of President Monroe was restored to the New World. There remained only one monarchy in America, the Empire of Brazil, where a branch of the Portuguese royal family continued to reign until 1889. In that year, the emperor was quietly packed off to Paris, and Brazil came into line with the rest of the continent. But while Napoleon was busy with his American adventure, Prussia and Italy were snatching victory over the Austrians in 1866. Italy was badly beaten at Custoza and in the naval battle of Lissa, but the Austrian army was so crushed by the Prussian at the Battle of Sadowa that Austria made an abject surrender. Italy gained the province of Venetia, so making one more step towards unity. Only Rome and Trieste, and a few small towns on the north and northwestern frontiers remained, and Prussia became the head of a North German confederation, from which Bavaria, Württemberg, Baden, Hesse, and Austria were excluded. 4 years later came the next step towards the natural political map of Europe, when Napoleon III plunged into war against Prussia. A kind of self-destroying foolishness urged him to do this. He came near to this war in 1867, so soon as he was free from Mexico, by demanding Luxembourg for France. He embarked upon it in 1870, when a cousin of the King of Prussia became a candidate for the vacant throne of Spain. Napoleon had some theory in his mind that Austria, Bavaria, Württemberg, and the other states outside the North German Confederation would side with him against Prussia. He probably thought this would happen because he wanted it to happen. But since 1848, the Germans, so far as foreign meddling was concerned, had been in spirit a united people. Bismarck was merely imposing the Hohenzollern monarchy with pomp, ceremony, and bloodshed upon accomplished facts. All Germany sided with Prussia. Early in August 1870, the united German forces invaded France. After the battles of Wörth and Gravelotte, one French army under Bazaine was forced into Metz and surrounded there, and on September 1st, a second, with which was Napoleon, was defeated and obliged to capitulate at Sedan. Paris found herself bare to the invader. For a second time, the promises of Napoleonism had failed France disastrously. On September 4th, France declared herself a republic again, and thus regenerated, prepared to fight for existence against triumphant Prussianism. For though it was a united Germany that had overcome French imperialism, it had Prussia in the saddle. The army in Metz capitulated in October. Paris, after a siege and bombardment, surrendered in January 1871. With pomp and ceremony, in the Hall of Mirrors at Versailles, amidst a great array of military uniforms, the King of Prussia was declared German Emperor, and Bismarck and the sword of the Hohenzollerns claimed the credit for that German unity which a common language and literature had long since assured. The Peace of Frankfurt was a Hohenzollern peace. Bismarck had availed himself of the national feeling of Germany to secure the aid of the South German states, but he had no grasp of the essential forces that had given victory to him and to his royal master. The power that had driven Prussia to victory was the power of the natural political map of Europe insisting upon the unity of the German-speaking peoples. In the East, Germany was already sinning against that natural map by her administration of Posen and other Polish districts. Now, greedy for territory and particularly for iron mines, she annexed a considerable area of French-speaking Lorraine, including Metz and Alsace, which in spite of its German speech was largely French in sympathy. Inevitably, there was a clash between German rulers and French subjects in these annexed provinces. Inevitably, the wrongs and bitterness of the subjugated France of Lorraine echoed in Paris and kept alive the passionate resentment of the French. The natural map had already secured political recognition in the Austrian Empire after Sadowa in 1866. Hungary, which had been subordinated to Austria, was erected into a kingdom on an equal footing with Austria, and the Empire of Austria had become the dual monarchy of Austria-Hungary. But in the southeast of this empire, and over the Turkish Empire, the boundaries and subjugations of the conquest period still remained. A fresh upthrust of the natural map began in 1875. When the Christian races in the Balkans, and particularly the Bulgarians, became restless and insurgent.